From the Sky News Centre at 6, a former headmaster of a boys' boarding school faces jail after being convicted of more than 50 offences, including violence and sexual abuse. Derek Slade, who is 61, worked at St George's School in Wicklewood in Norfolk, which later moved to Suffolk. He was a paedophile who inflicted corporal punishment on pupils as young as 8 between 1978 and 1983. His victims have described how they were in fear of him.
I was horsewhipped, I was hit with a bat, I was hit with a trainer, and that was his weapons.
He had 15, 25 lads queued up, waiting to be beaten.
There's been an explosion and fire at a Hare Krishna temple in Leicester. Everyone is thought to have escaped, with some suffering minor injuries. A couple rearrested in connection with an alleged honour killing have been released on bail. Shafilia Ahmed was 17 when she disappeared from her home at Warrington in Cheshire in October 2003. Her parents deny any involvement in her death. All but one of 12 football hooligans who rioted after a UEFA Cup final have been jailed. They're among hundreds of Rangers fans who caused mayhem at the match against Zenit St Petersburg in Manchester 2 years ago. Cricket will survive the recent corruption allegations, according to England's team director Andy Flower. Three Pakistani players are being questioned by police over claims of a betting scam linked to the final test with England. While in football, and the Republic of Ireland have won their opening Euro 2012 qualifier in Armenia. Heath Fahey's debut goal, 14 minutes from time, was enough for a 1-0 win. Wales begin their campaign in Montenegro in half an hour. The Welsh skipper Craig Pellery has been doing his homework on the opposition.
I like this team. I like the way they play. I especially like their forward players. I'd love to be able to pronounce their names, but I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying it.
Scotland kick off their first competitive game under Craig Levein in just over an hour away to Lithuania, while Northern Ireland's game in Slovenia gets underway at 7.45. And England are facing Bulgaria at Wembley in an 8 o'clock kickoff. That's the latest. I'm Ursula Hansford.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Your Learning ESOL course
invites you to improve your English language and learn more about
British legal system,
welfare benefits,
education,
employment rights.
Study ESOL through the radio every Wednesday, Thursday and Friday from 7 o'clock.
To receive your free ESOL workbook and join this course, please call 0751 991 7491 and leave your name and number.
The Your Learning team are waiting to hear from you
today.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Well, welcome back to Friday Drive Time with me, Tony Gosling. We devote the second hour this week to Bristol City Council's bombshell, which was dropped back in June, that 64 slices of Bristol's green space, that's parks and playing fields included, have been earmarked to be sold off to housing developers. Well, this is made all the more confusing because a parallel consultation which looks at this is taking place. Both the area green space plans and something called the Site Allocations and Development Management Options document. The latter is where often big landowners and developers take a great deal of interest years beforehand and can make a small fortune just changing the use of land. Another problem is that the consultation doesn't include former industrial brownfield land, which almost all local people say is where the new housing should go. Cynics might say this is because the housing developers would rather build on cheap green land than pay the greater prices for brownfield sites. Anyway, I'm joined by three campaigners now. From Victory Park is Debbie Hurst. Welcome to Drive Time, Debbie.
Thank you very much.
And from Lodge Hill, that's Kingswood, near Colsham Hospital, Pauline Potter. Hi, Pauline.
Hello.
Now, first of all, Pauline, do you want to start? Can you just tell me about your area? Which bits of land are being affected over there?
Right, well, this land is not terribly big, but it's used a lot and it goes back many years. When we started our campaign, people that had lived in the area were absolutely horrified because they look on it as their heritage.
Can you just describe the piece of land for us? About how big is it and what does it look like?
Nearly as big as College Green, you would say. But it's undulating. It's not flat at all. And, you know, it's...
Is this a green space or a park or both or what?
Well, it's just a place with a wonderful view.
But if tell us about the view then from this spot.
You can see from there, you can see over to Wales, you can see the Cotswolds, you can see the 27 bridges, and people gather there very, very often to see balloons. In winter, they toboggan, and you can see, you saw Concorde going over. It's well used and loved for such a, I wouldn't call it a huge space, but it's a lovely spot, giving fresh air.
But don't you think that's actually a perfect spot for housing? Because from the windows you can get a fantastic view.
It would from a developer's point of view, yes. But once those houses are up, we're going to be blocked. And it's going to be claustrophobic. We've had four lots of housing developments just adjacent to Cosham Hospital. We have Cheshire Homes, which is built in the hospital grounds. And now they want to put more housing, and it's going to block people off entirely.
Yeah, but you see, there is a desperate need for housing, so it's got to go somewhere. This sounds like an ideal space to me.
No, it's not. And it should go on brownfill or the other type of whatever's there, derelict places.
Now, I'm also joined by Debbie Hurst from Brislington. Debbie, can you just tell us about the area you're campaigning around? Whereabouts are you?
Victory Park is in Brislington. The park itself was given to the people of Brislington in perpetuity. To quote the council, it's in a semi-rural setting, and this is because it's surrounded by 48.5 acres of wild fields and meadows, some a little bit of wooded land, some allotments. It's an absolutely magnificent site, and from the top of the hill, the top fields, there is a panoramic view which is second to none. Of South Bristol, you can see Ashton Court. It's a magnificent view. These fields are under threat, and grave threat. I believe it's probably the biggest site in terms of land there is. I'm not sure of that, but I believe that's to be true. Now, these fields have been used by local people for 50, 60, 70, goodness knows how many years. They're surrounded by hedgerow. The wildlife in these fields and around there is teeming. It's wild birds of prey, badgers, foxes, green woodpeckers, sparrows, finches, butterflies, bees, now an endangered species. We don't have bees, we all die. Hello, people. So this area, wild orchids, discovered one in the fields this summer, the inevitable blackberries, old gnarled oaks. I mean, it is just a fantastic, most beautiful sight. Now, in these fields, we have public footpaths scattered all over them, and people use these public footpaths. And although these fields aren't categorised as open spaces, for 50, 60, 70 years, people have used these fields. Horses graze in them. Up until a couple of years ago, the top fields were used by cattle. It's an absolute travesty that this site, and indeed the other sites, are being threatened when Bristol is full of brownfield sites. It is full of empty council houses. It is full of private houses which have been empty. Now, if we want 10,000 new homes between 2006 and 2026, why does the council have so many empty council houses? In Bristol, Bedminster, there's a council estate called Tor House and I think Kerrymere, which is 200 some flats which have been empty for over 2 years. Now, people, get together and look at the empty buildings that are around you, be they council or private. Write them down and name and shame, because why should we give up our green spaces when there are perfectly good houses out there that can be reused, recycled in this green, Bristol is a green city. Hello, is it really? You know, come on, people, unite on this. It's important. We all need our green spaces for our children, our grandchildren, for nature, for everybody. Unite, get together. Please, I beg you to get together on this.
But Debbie, ultimately, this is a consultation. The council are just looking at these potential sites at the moment, aren't they? So it may be that your particular spot will be saved from housing.
You can't assume anything. especially with councils, because I accept that they're under pressure. They are under financial pressure. I accept that. But it is highly important that they do their research properly. For instance, if we have 926 homes built on these fields, the infrastructure of Bath Road cannot stand it. We all know Bath Road is a nightmare as it is. If we have 926 homes, average 2 cars per unit, it is going to be standstill. The doctor's surgeries can't handle it. The schools can't handle it. The fire station probably can't handle it. Our local police station is under threat. If that police station goes, the responses have to come from either Broadbury Road or Trinity Road. And if it's response time in you know, high density traffic, that means that whatever's going on is going to be caught up in an even worse high density traffic situation. So, you know, we need our local police station. I mean, this is just has not been thought out. This reeks of desperation by the council to obtain money for without consulting the local people.
Well, that's exactly what's going on at the moment, isn't it? The consultation. But Debbie, can you see that there's actually a movement in your local area to oppose this then?
There's a very big movement. We did a march, which went very well. We're trying to get together with SOGS, which is Save Our Green Spaces. There's a rally actually going on the 7th of September, College Green at 6 p.m. And this is against...
That's next Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, next Tuesday. And that's to protest against all 62 threatened sites under this area green space plan.
So next Tuesday, what time at College Green?
I believe it's 6 o'clock. So that's next Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
The full council meeting starts at 6, so people need to be down there prior to 6 o'clock, between 5 and 6 o'clock.
Between 5 and
now,
6,
there. Now, you may be wondering who you just heard there. That's Rosemary. Now, Rosemary Rindu Jeffries, you're also from the Lodge Hill area. Now, it sounds as if it's just a little tiny bit of space. It might have a nice view, but you can see why, surely, housing developers would love to build houses on there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why my neighbour here, Pauline, and I live there. We love it. And one of the reasons was we bought it for the view. We won't have a view, of course, because there's a development possible in front of our houses. The point is, obviously, initially, we overlook the site. I see from my windows the whole of this small green space, which, as I say, is much the same size as College Green. It, like College Green, has a terribly busy and heavy traffic road on one side of it. And the point is, how can you possibly have on this tiny piece of green a large development and 10 small allotments? I've spoken to the allotments man, 10 small allotments. The slope is super for tobogganing. I can't see possibly how you can garden on it.
Aren't you just simply worried about the value of your house? Because, I mean, obviously, if a house has got a nice bit of park or green next to it, it's worth more, isn't it? And you're going to probably lose value from your home.
Look, at this site is at the top of Lodge Hill, a little green oasis in the midst of a very built-up housing area. It is uncluttered, it's well-kept, sloping grass area where people of all ages enjoy the simple pleasure of space and a chance to look at the magnificent view over Bristol and beyond. I'm talking about the Cotswolds, Two Severn Bridges and the Welsh Hills. I mean, where else in the city could you possibly see that? It's magnificent.
So can you just explain what's been going on up at Lodge Hill then? How you've been actually, first of all, how you first found this was going to take place and then how you've been organising to oppose it?
It was very simple. It was in the Evening Post. Pauline rushed into my house. We live next door to
Am I right? This is this article that appeared
Absolutely.
In June. Yeah,
in June, the double-page spread from the Evening Post with all the details of the 62 sites, our site being included. And my neighbour came in. We're very passionate about this space. We love where we live. It's got full of history. We're a coal mining area. We have history. We have the coal miners. We Cosham Hospital, all for the people. And this land apparently did belong to Cosham Hospital at one time. It was all part of the same site. It does now belong to the council and they keep it cut very much at the moment. And the point being that this land is used, it has a right of way running through it. At the moment, the official right of way on the maps isn't quite right, but we're looking into that very carefully. and it's used by young people playing football. You're talking about people sunbathing on it, and we've got new flats behind us. Paulie mentioned four developments behind our houses. Now those people in the flats come and use this space now. I've seen young people sunbathing on it. I've seen older people who are working coming saying they come down here, they come with their cameras, they come with their binoculars. They enjoy the space as a recreational ground. Old people use it, young people use it. Prior to going to the drop-in centre at Fishponds at Vassal Centre just this week, where I learned an awful lot of things I'm very pleased to have heard, and once I've been down there, I've realised how lacking in consultation this whole thing has been. Absolutely.
So why do you say that you were very glad to hear that? What did you hear down at the Vassal Centre?
They were absolutely lovely. They were just workers at the council house, town planners, people like that. They work in measurements. They work, every person has to have so many feet to live in. They all have to have so much green within 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it is. It all works on numbers. Mm. Now, numbers is very different to emotion. Mm. And the point is, these people, even though they worked on our site, they might have only been to our site once. That is from the planning point of view with the building, and that is from the planning, the allotment centre, the allotment section, which is a sympathy vote. And Gary Hopkins, of course, does speak about allotments because that's where sympathy goes to people. Oh, we all want allotments. Well, I say to you that we've got all the houses on our area. They're quite old. They all have gardens. Now, the only people that don't have gardens really are the people in flats. And they've bought flats because they don't want gardens, mainly. You know, they can have them when they move on or something like that. Plus, the fact I do believe a lot of these gardens aren't used. Now, there's garden chair. I don't know if anybody else has heard about it, but it was only when I was talking to the allotments manager, I said, look, with all these gardens where nobody is using them, they're all empty, they're a mess, there are many people that could perhaps rent those gardens from the houses, and if it's older people or something like that, they could have a portion of the vegetables and make a very good agreement. He said, oh, we have a garden share. I said, well, why don't any of us know about it? Why dig up a beautiful site that is used by many, many people every single week? And we love that site. We need it for our health. We need it for our health and well-being.
You've brought up there this whole sort of thing between the numbers game and the emotions involved. Don't you think that local residents are really treating this as an emotional issue, and they're not seeing the wider responsibility that the city has to make sure enough houses are built?
No, because the whole point, as I said before, is yes, I mean, houses do need to be built. Well, I don't think any of us here disagree with that. It's where the houses are built. And, you know, when you have fantastic old warehouses sometimes, which can be, with a bit of imagination, transformed into the most amazing flats. They do it in London. They've done it in Southville. You know, you can, with a bit of imagination, you can change these buildings into fantastic dwellings. I mean, you know, they're very chic, trendy buildings now to use old industrial sites as flats.
So, Debbie, what has gone wrong here then?
They haven't consulted us. They haven't consulted us.
We're in the
local
middle of a
people.
Massive consultation. I mean, I've got a leaflet
they have
here
decided
showing
that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
Tony,
7,
no.
8, 9, 12, 13 different
no,
meetings.
Tony, no. You can. They have announced these on little pieces of paper stuck on park fences. Now, if you want a true consultation, you have to alert the public, the local residents, of what is going on. And as we said earlier, the only reason in my area, and I would say in your area, that people have been alerted to this is because it has been done by word of mouth by local people. It certainly hasn't been done by the council.
So have you found that some of the local groups have almost been saying, well, we think the housing should be going in your area, and other groups
No,
saying,
I haven't. No, okay. I haven't. I think we're all speaking as one here. Yeah, we're all concerned about our local area, but we are all speaking as one. There are alternatives, as everybody says. Brownfield. Turning old empty warehouses, old buildings. I mean, there's a huge building down at Temple Meads owned by the council that you could make fantastic flats in. not allowing the council to get away with keeping their own council stock empty for years on end.
Now, there are quite a lot of these consultation days being held over the next couple of weeks, and I'll be reading out a list of them where they're taking place at the end of the hour. But first, let's have a listen to yesterday, because there was a consultation, one of these consultation things going on about Bristlington East and West, which includes St Anne's and Broom Hill, at the Arnos Manor Hotel yesterday. And down there I met several people, including Patrick Lyons from St Anne's Resident Action Group. You've got a list there, haven't you, of about 8 or 9 sites. So what are they?
They are derelict sites that have been sites for development for a long time, all within a spitting distance of St Anne's Park, Victoria Park and Newbridge Green. And Newbridge Green has been there. I've lived in that road for 40 years. My late husband was 69 when he died last year, and has always been a green in his whole life. Why do they want to build houses on a stupid bit of green like that? It divides the road between St Anne's Road and Newbridge Road, and it's like an oasis of calm. Everybody crosses the road using the green. Dog walkers, children. I seen children out there playing the other day. They're not going to be able to do that. They put houses on there. And plus the fact is, I mean, what a stupid place to try and put housing or flats or whatever. I mean, we have a lot of problems with parking where I live, with commercial vehicles. But at the same time, somebody's got to park somewhere. What's going to happen when they take that little bit of green and put houses there? Where are they going to park then?
Well, the council's saying that, people have got to live somewhere.
Yeah. There's 8 sites there that could be developed. And what a wonderful place for them to live. One of them actually overlooks the river.
Just walked out because I'm boiling.
I stood by you, didn't I?
Yeah, I'm boiling. Yeah. I'm just having a calm down.
They've got no idea what's going on, have they?
My name's Patrick Lyons. I'm a local resident. And I'm part of the St Anne's Resident Action Group. We fully understand that there is a need for more housing in the Bristol area. We don't deny that and we're not fighting that. What we are saying is that it needs to be much better thought out. Do not destroy the green spaces which make this city unique and great. There is no other city in England that has as many quality green spaces that Bristol does. So let's keep those green spaces and instead build upon the multitude of derelict brownfield sites within the city. Numerous sites within the city. For instance, in our area, St Anne's. The proposal is to build 29 houses on St Anne's Park. We say, well, don't build them there. Why don't you compulsory purchase the many empty warehouses in the St Philip's area and put a community back into St Philip's? If they need a plan for this, look at the Dings. The Dings is now an award-winning community area. The same can be done in St Philip's. It is a beautiful area. There are a number of reasons why this could be done in St Philip's. St Philip's has a well-established, well-planned infrastructure that can take more housing. If you actually look at their consultation plan, there is not one brownfield site earmarked for redevelopment or new housing. It is all open space, green space and open areas.
Youngsters nowadays don't play in the park so much. They're sitting on their computer games and things like that, so maybe we just don't need our open spaces.
Any time of the day, any weekday or weekend, please come along to St Anne's Park. We will be only too happy to see you there. There is an active mother and toddlers group that always plays in the new kids play area that we funded, by the way, not the council. There are always kids playing football or riding bikes in our park. So to say that it is underused and kids sit playing computer games is nonsense.
So what do you think is behind all this then?
They need to make money to provide social housing for the city and they're going for the easy option.
Yeah, having this consultation, they're trying to make sure that everyone in the area is being asked about it and consulted.
No, they're not. They are covering themselves legally by running this consultation process as they have to do. They announced it in the Evening Post. The Evening Post is not taken by everyone in the city. In our area, in St Anne's, I think there's probably 12 people along our road that take the Evening Post. and it was down to them to let everybody else know that we knew about it in the first place.
I found that through a leaflet put through my door.
So are you saying that there's been actually nothing coming through your door, even though you're someone who raises money for the local park and it's very close to you, that there's nothing officially telling you, just a little piece in the Evening Post?
Exactly right. I've just been talking to the parks officer, and I've got to say that I found him extremely patronising. He seems to think that he can talk down to the local residents and that, oh, they'll wander off because we'll get our plans and we'll do what we want anyway. Well, no, he won't. And no, the council won't. I will say a very clear statement to the council now, which I firmly believe in, and this couldn't be clearer. You vote off our parks, we'll vote you off. Various members who are now local councillors will not be local councillors in the future.
Well, there's a bit of a threat there to vote out some of the Liberal Democrat councillors, anyway, at least if they are the ones that have supported this consultation. And that was Patrick Lyons you heard there from the St Anne's Resident Action Group. And I'm joined in the studio by Debbie Hurst from Brislington, and also by Rosemary Rendu Jeffries from Lodge Hill. Debbie, can you tell me, how was your Resident Action Group formed originally?
Well, basically, it was formed by people spreading by word of mouth.
And how quickly? And where? You know, so this started in June.
It first started. I was first alerted when the cherries were out. Whenever that was, so I would say, sort of, yeah, June-ish, by a man who just came down and said, "Did you know?" Which I didn't. So I then literally that day shoved posters up on all the styes over the fields that I could muster. I went round the park three or four times a day telling everybody I know, because I'm a complete Luddite. I don't have a computer, so I do it the old-fashioned way. I accosted kids with parents and said, "Kids, why don't you write handmade posters and put them on lampposts? Because people read handmade posters more than they do computerized posters." So I kind of did it that way, and then people sort of with computers kind of got together and then formulated a march, and through that march people started to meet each other, and we have sort of formed as a group now. We've actually got a website now, which is up today, which is www.friendsofvictorypark.co.uk. That goes up today. There's also a Facebook group, Victory Park Brislington. Email is victorypark@live.co.uk. Both of those are worth a visit. And if I could just say one more thing, the Love Food Festival, which is being held at Paintworks on Sunday the 26th of September, we're holding a letter writing and poster creating workshop to save Victory Park Fields. And we hope to present an original format of United Local Protest by making posters made by local children and adults who get kind of inspired. And we're hoping that we can bring a whole load of materials from the fields to make the posters and cards and things like that. So, you know, do go along, because the food festival, Love Food Festival, is great in itself, and it's really nice of them to give us that space to do this. So,
Debbie, can you understand people who shrug their shoulders at this sort of thing and say, well, the council are just doing this kind of consultation, they're going to be building these houses anyway?
No, I can't. You know, come on, guy, where's the old Dunkirk spirit? You know, we are a nation historically of protesters, and we've lost this belief in ourselves. We've lost this belief that we can change things. You know, we can, but we have to speak up. We have to stand and say, you don't rule us. We vote you in. And you are supposed to represent us and our opinions, and you are supposed to listen to them. So, come on, people, as a united voice, it's not Victory Park against Nightingale Valley. It's not St Anne's against wherever else. It's about us as the people of Bristol, proud of this city being a green city. Well, let's keep it green.
Well, if those houses aren't built on Victory Park, they're going to be built next door to somebody else, aren't they?
No, they're going to be built, they should be built on brownfield sites, and they're going to be built, let's face it, they're not going to be built by the council because the council can't afford it. So the council are going to sell the land to private businesses. Now, private businesses will have to afford the excess. Why should the people of Bristol pay private businesses to have the cheapest format of building their homes? Why should we pay for it when they make a phenomenal amount of money when they sell these buildings? So there's one argument against this. You know, it's not about private business. It's about our heritage. This is our green space. This has got nothing to do with Wimpy or Barrett's or whoever else. This belongs to us and it should not be sold cheaply.
Now, that NIMBYism argument, which I just put to you there, I also put to Labour MP for Bristol East, Kerry McCarthy, and I had a chat with her at this consultation that was taking place at Arnos Vale Hotel yesterday.
It's Kerry McCarthy, Member of Parliament for Bristol East. We're in the middle of a consultation on the council's plans to dispose of some of their green open spaces, and I've been contacted by a huge number of constituents who are concerned about the proposals, you know, who object to the proposals, don't want the land sold off. So I'm making the most of it being recessed and not being in Parliament by going around meeting residents at events like this to see what the proposals are, see what the council officers have to say, but also listen to residents' objections.
So the first question is, why sell them off?
Well, there's an obvious need for housing. You know, I'm not denying that. And we do need to build more, particularly more affordable housing. But if you look at the proposals, you know, I mean, we also need to make sure that there's the decent quality of life, that it's sustainable, that the environment's protected. And Bristol, you know, likes to boast of being, you know, potentially the UK's green capital, and you don't do that if you just concrete over everywhere. And there's also a concern, you know, particularly in this area in Brislington, the traffic problems are absolutely horrendous here on the A4 in particular. If you look at the Victory Park proposals, where they could be up to 926 housing units built, so that could be like say 1500 cars, all putting pressure on the local roads. So we do need to look at those things. And the other thing I would say is there are quite a lot of brownfield sites that have been earmarked for industrial development but have been empty for decades. And it's fairly obvious that if during economic boom times nobody wanted to invest there, and during times when land prices hit rock bottom, nobody wanted to invest there, the chances are, you know, they are not going to be developed, they're not going to be used for employment. So we should be looking at those as a priority for putting housing on instead.
Well, what about finding out whether the council are likely to sell off bits of land around people? How do people find out if this is going to happen?
Well, I think the way the consultation's been handled, I mean, it's good that they've got events like this, but the documents are quite confusing. People who've tried to access them online in particular, because most of it is an online consultation, have found it quite difficult. And, I mean, one thing that has just become apparent to me looking at the maps tonight is that the consultation is only the tip of the iceberg in some ways. There's the green spaces, things that are considered to be public open space, are part of this strategy document, part of this consultation. But actually with Victory Park, most of the land is deemed to be a council asset, isn't part of the consultation, but that's where the biggest plans are to sell off, you know, what's actually quite wild meadows. So there's a separate strategy, if you like, for brownfield sites, which isn't out to consultation at the moment. So I'm worried that, you know, all the attention will be on these little green spaces, whereas actually the bigger picture is that there's a lot of other land that they're looking at selling off as well. And one of the key things is it's very much being sort of trumpeted that 70% of the proceeds of selling off the 69 green spaces that have been identified will be ring-fenced to go back into improving Bristol's parks. There's two issues with that. One is, you know, for start, it's only 70%, and it's not ring-fenced per neighbourhood. So you could have lands sold off in places like Brislington that then get spent on parks in Clifton. But also, most of the areas, like, say, Victory Park, if it's deemed to be a council asset that doesn't fall within one of these 69 spaces, none of that money gets spent on improving green spaces. That all goes into council coffers. So they could be making a huge amount of money out of this. And I'd say it's, you know, obviously to fulfil a certain political agenda, but that's probably an issue for discussion another day. But I just do worry that they're rushing headlong into this. And, yes, we do need housing, but, you know, I think people could suddenly find their green space has disappeared almost overnight, and it's too late then to save it. I think here, you know, it's really great that the community has sort of become aware of what's going on. There's some very vocal people, very organised people that are campaigning against it. And they are coming up now with their ideas as to where they'd like to see developed instead, like, say, the St Philip's Marsh area, which has got quite a lot of empty warehousing units. So it's not NIMBYism, you know, it's people that do appreciate that, you know, probably their own families are finding it difficult to get on the housing ladder or whatever, but... it stems from a genuine appreciation for the fact that Bristol has got these green lungs across the city and that we ought to protect them.
Do you think it's actually justified to be selling off parks and playing fields?
Well, it flies in the face of the council's whole agenda, which is meant to be, you know, about Bristol being sustainable and as green capital. And the sort of people who move to Bristol, they live here because it's not like central London. It's not a concrete jungle. It's not like Birmingham or whatever. You know, it is a nice green city. And there's a lot of people that really, you know, value nature. They're cyclists, they're ramblers, whatever. I think there's going to be a huge backlash if the council push ahead with this. I think there's going to be quite a protest at the council meeting on Tuesday, which is just the start. And, you know, I hope that they listen to public opinion. And the other thing is, I don't want them just to listen to the people who shout the loudest, because there's always a danger of that, isn't there, that it's just the groups that are the best organised. And I really think they should be looking at the value to the communities of those spaces and, you know, looking for alternatives.
That's Kerry McCarthy, MP for Bristol East. They're speaking at the consultation yesterday over the parks sell-off plans. Now, Rosemary Rendu-Jeffries, you're from Lodge Hill. Could you just tell us about this protest, which is happening next week again? Why has it been decided that is the best place to make some sort of public presence of, sort of resisting some of these changes to the plan, where houses are going to be being built on green sites?
Well, for a start, we're not against houses, as has been said before. It's the green sites are loved and used by people every day. They're part of our structure and our city. They're part of why we're a lovely city. Because once they're built on, they won't be there, so we won't have them. The protest is there. It's a peaceful protest, and it's on College Green, because that's obviously when the outside the council house, the first full council meeting is going to take place there, and one of the things being discussed is this green space sell-off. And obviously we want people from all over the city to come down prior to the 6 o'clock meeting, so people need to get down there, because there's going to be an awful lot of people. And obviously if everybody's getting on buses and traffic and trying to get to College Green, they need to give themselves time, and we want them there between 5 and 6 o'clock, because we want photographs, we want the press will be there, Evening Post, who have done fantastically for this particular protest, for this particular issue, and they understand that the people are very, very upset about it all.
Now, I was going to say, if people simply just want to come down and find out what's going on in their area, is it a good time to come along? I mean, will they be able to find out about what's happening in their
people
local area down there?
They're discussing this whole thing, because it's a very emotional thing. And the point is, this is something where people have looked at the various areas in the city and said, oh, they've got a bit of green space here, we'll build on that, that's fine. Now, that is very wrong. That changes people's lives overnight. We have to be consulted. And like it was said, we weren't consulted properly. And I've got a letter here from Kerry McCarthy, our local MP, who my neighbour and I went to straight away, and she's absolutely behind us, yeah, full 100%, and so is our councillor. I'll read this, which is a section of the letter she wrote to every citizen, every resident around our particular triangle of space. As I say, the triangle is about the size of College Green, with a very busy road on one side of it. And she says, in as part of this letter, I personally find it remarkable that Bristol City Council are even considering selling these important green spaces for development, especially with the amount of brownfield sites that could be used instead. I also believe that Bristol City Council so far failed to properly consult local residents, and I have already written a letter to Councillor Barbara Jank, the leader of the council, to complain about the way the consultation process has been handled. I have reproduced the main body of this letter below, and she goes on to say all those things that
but actually she's wrong about the consultation, because I went along to a consultation yesterday, and as I was saying, that there's something like 9 or 10 different specific, I mean, there's a consultation running until the end of October. That's when the deadline is for people to submit their replies to what they think. But there's also this whole there's a whole load of meetings going on right across the city up until I think the last one's on the 4th of October in the individual areas about specific areas. So the council surely are doing their best, aren't they?
Well, this is all announcing them in a really positive way. I mean, you know, you've got to put it on the television. You've got to put it in newspapers, not just the Evening Post. You know, you've got to get it out there to the people because not everybody has got a computer. Not everybody buys the Evening Post for whatever reasons. So you have to leaflet people. You have to put money into a public consultation. You have to post things to people in the areas concerned so that they have on a piece of paper, snail mail it may be, but it works. Everybody has something that drops through their letterbox that informs them of the plans, the proposals, and the consulting meetings that are going on.
But what about people who aren't really that interested? And actually, the sort of people I was talking about earlier, they just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, they're going to do this anyway.
Well, that's beside the point, because there are hundreds and thousands of people who are interested. And indeed, that apathy, if people start to realise that their local residents are starting to get angry, are starting to get unified, you can often plough through that apathy. The British people are very shy at protesting, and I don't know where this has come from, because we used to be very good. But we've become very shy of letting people know what we think and how we feel. And often, if local people who aren't shy can get together and rally, you'll find that the shy people, the people who just shrug their shoulders because they don't want to seem like they're, you know, causing a scene or whatever, will get rallied, will start to get angry, will start to get involved. Because I can't believe that there are many people who genuinely shrug their shoulders and say, well, I can't be bothered. I mean, I do say they exist, but I can't believe that there is a huge swathe of those people. I think it's far more likely that there's a huge swathe of people that, if they really understood and knew about this, would be up in arms.
Now, back to the consultation yesterday, and you're going to hear now from V. Camose, who's a teacher who was actually at the consultation, and see what she had to say.
My name's Vika Moisey and I live in a house which backs onto the park. One of the reasons the council are given is that the new housing would give natural surveillance. They're saying that one of the reasons that St Anne's has been earmarked is because there are lots of ASBOs on it and there's lots of trouble. Avon Somerset Police report that actually there's only been 4 cases in the last 4 years, which is not high. There's natural surveillance from the houses that are there already. My house backs onto the park. I can have a clear view of most of the park. And believe me, if I saw something I thought was not right, I'd be on the phone to the police and letting them know. And I've lived in St Anne's 3 years and have had no trouble at all myself. So I think that argument falls a little bit flat. St Anne's is a very small park. They're talking about an area of 0.6 hectares, which boils down to about 28 houses. It can't support 28 houses and a road access through the present park. We're just not happy about the whole situation. They're having a consultation now. I think they're doing that to cover themselves legally. But my concern is that this will just happen anyway, regardless of whether they consult locals or not. That's my big concern.
Can you give us just an idea of you know, what the park's like and what amenities it provides at the moment?
It's used by local football teams. There's a football league that play there Saturdays and Sundays. It's used by a fitness club on a Saturday morning. That's got a big group of followers now, of which I'm one of them. It has a children's play area which is used every day. I've been on my summer holidays, I'm a teacher, I've been on holiday, and I can see the view from my window, and that park, that children's park, is used almost throughout the day. Sometimes I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning and people are walking their dogs. I've seen runners in there, walkers in there, people having picnics, there's a mother and toddlers group. It's an extremely well-used park. And again, one of the council's arguments is that it's not being used very much. So, you know, my suggestion to them is that they come and do a survey of usage and check that out.
So what's going to happen if they just decide, well, they're going to build on your park?
I think then, you know, it will be our job to vote them out in the next elections. We put together a residents action group, and we can only keep doing what we hope will persuade the council that this is not a good plan. We need our green space. One of my big upsets about this whole thing is that I found out when a leaflet came through my door from another resident, from a neighbour, telling me about what was happening, and I think that's wrong. And they've obviously been thinking about it for a long time when you look at all the documentation that they now have today.
Are you saying you haven't actually anything through the door, even though you're right next to the park?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing at all has come to our door from the council regarding this.
That's V. Camose from, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that, anyway, from the Victory Park Action Group. Now, our Oxford economist Martin Summers is joining me here now. Old Labour, I should say, Oxford economist. Martin, we've heard some really strong feelings here about preserving the local area, but there is a bit of a dilemma, isn't there? Because surely new houses have to be built somewhere. Why is it, do you think, what we're seeing, all this sort of pain going on with actually parks being sold off for housing right now?
Well, I think the problem is, it comes back to the economic crisis, frankly. The council will be wanting to sell these parks and green spaces because they need cash to keep functioning. When I used to work for the council some years ago, the chief executive at the time was making it clear that the problem going forward, that in order to keep the services that the council provides functioning, there is a financial hole, and therefore these stopgap measures are taken, basically short run revenue raising measures, flogging off the family silver in order to try and keep the council's spending on track. And I'm afraid as the crisis develops, and it's probably going to get worse, I'm afraid, these kind of hard choices will be forced on local councils because they haven't actually got the resources to do what they should be doing. We need to change the economic policy so that we're not pushing ourselves down into this cul-de-sac.
But that's like turning around a super tanker, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. I think really what we've got to get away from is we need to invest for the future in sustainable economy. And of course, that means keeping green spaces, not getting rid of them. We need more powers for councils to take over brownfield sites. I mean, one of the problems is that they don't actually have the power to deal with brownfield sites. If you think about the great big old multi-storey car park in Stokes Croft, which has been there as a health hazard. You know, people have died inside that car park, drug overdoses and falling off it and so on. And basically, the council doesn't have the power to compulsorily purchase the wretched building and knock it down and build something sensible.
Well, they do sometimes, don't they? I mean, particularly in a case like that, I'm still very surprised the council haven't exercised their powers to compulsorily
Having worked inside the council and been involved with some planning applications and looking into the planning applications, I wasn't in the planning department, but I had some input into it. It was made clear to me that in actual fact people think that local authorities have these powers to compulsorily purchase, you know, buildings that aren't being used properly and so on. But in actual fact, like most things in Britain, the laws favour the property owner, not the local community and the local democratic process. And that's just goes back to the year dot. I mean, it basically needs to be changed. We actually need to have more powers in the hands of councils so that they can develop these brownfield sites and not have to deal with all of this, getting rid of the green spaces that everyone wants to keep.
Well, one of the obvious things here, though, is obviously property prices at the moment are quite deflated, and this seems like a silly time to be selling off this land.
Well, yes, I mean, it looks as if this is party political to some extent, because Kerry McCarthy, the Labour MP, and is saying that we shouldn't be selling the land off, and the Liberal Democrat administration are saying that they want to go ahead with it. I mean, that will obviously impact on the way people will vote when the next elections take place.
But there is a massive democratic deficit here, isn't there? Because we've got this system now of cabinet government in the city, local government, where actually the decisions are made by the cabinet and not by the full council. In fact, even if the full council voted on Tuesday to overturn this entire consultation and say start again, that would be null and void because
if the entire council voted against it, that would actually put us spoke in the wheels. But the problem is that we need the local government doesn't have the right powers to do the right things, And also the main problem is that the economy needs to be fixed. Obviously the wider context of this is this cuts policy that's going to be pursued, and obviously every week I'm on here saying that this is basically silly.
But the policy hasn't been changed, Martin, so what's the point of all this campaigning if the policy still hasn't been changed?
Well, what will happen is people have basically been asleep up to now, and as we go into this next phase of the crash, people are will start to realise that more radical policies are required, and we can't just carry on muddling through. But up to now, people have been happy to try and muddle through. But once we get it seriously into the crisis, then we'll have to make some serious decisions. And there will have to be pain. But that pain actually should be distributed at the top where it's deserved, not to the people at the bottom.
Now, Rosemary Rendu-Jeffries is still with me from Lodge Hill. Rosemary, you had the phrase coined about you, green goddesses. Why was that and how?
Well, that's a double-page spread went out in the Evening Post, and it was written by David Clancy, a very nice article, and obviously the header writers gave it a title. David did say to me, "I'm sorry, it wasn't me," but actually Pauline and I said we were perfectly happy about being called Greek goddesses, just as long as the Evening Post did not expect us to wear green lycra outside the council house on Tuesday the 7th of September, before the meeting.
Now Debbie Hurst is here too from Brislington. Debbie, you were just waving your hands around there. You wanted to say something while Martin was speaking.
I didn't know that councils could not compulsory purchase. I find that incredible.
No, I think they can under some circumstances. I think what Martin's saying is that it's really only if you've got a landowner or landlord who is really deficient in some way. If the landowner or landlord wants to, they can really fight it quite successfully.
Yeah, but if you've got a building in Stokes Croft, right, where people have died, where heroin users and I feel sorry for heroin users, you know, if they're in there injecting themselves, if people are dying in this building, then the person who owns the building should either be forced to make that building safe and decent to look at, or should be forced to sell it.
Well, I think what generally happens is that they secure the building, and then after a while, so people kind of get back in again. I mean, this is always the problem, I think, with empty buildings, and I think this is one of, you know, we come across again and again here, is that actually it's quite dangerous to leave buildings empty for long periods of time.
Yes.
When we had the anarchists on a couple of weeks ago, the squatters in St Paul's, and they were saying that actually they were having some problems with the fire brigade, because they were saying you haven't got the right fire regulations. But then it's just a double-edged sword, because the fire brigade are also saying empty buildings are much more dangerous.
Well, of course they are, because an empty building is going to depreciate in health-wise. You know, dampness is going to get in, then floors rot, then ceilings rot, then, you know, it's far better to have a building with an occupant, because that keeps the building healthy. The longer you leave a building empty, the more a building is then in its death throes. And it is absolutely criminal that all over this country, let alone Bristol, there are buildings that are being allowed to die in front of councils in residential areas where they could be still performing a decent life. And this is true about anywhere in the country. It is certainly true about Bristol. The number of empty brownfield sites there are, the number of empty private homes there are, the number of empty council homes there are, these buildings are dying. And if you have a community that is full of dying buildings, you have a dying community that has no pride in itself.
Okay, we're going to hear a final clip from Victory Park Action Group. This is Paul Jobson, and I think Victory Park are particularly lucky to have Paul, because he's also a professional planner. He was at yesterday's consultation.
I'm Paul Jobson. I'm a local resident, but became aware of the council's proposals through my work. I provide planning advice to local authorities around the country. And my main concern with the area green space plan is, in my view, Brislington doesn't meet the council's own standard for formal space and children's play space. So I don't really understand how the council can propose to sell off spaces without any way of re-providing these sort of spaces elsewhere. So the basis for my objection is really the council hasn't used the latest population projections for Brislington. They've used older ones, which underestimate the amount of space required in the area based on the current population. So they're already suggesting that we don't need as much as we really do. So that, combined with the fact that they're talking about selling off us some spaces, really sort of has implications in the long term. Brislington's blessed with lots of natural space, and that's really great, and we like it. But the council sets standards for different types of provision. And by the council's own standard, Brislington doesn't meet their standard for children's play space or formal space.
But the council will say, look, they own actually more land than most local authorities in the country, and it really is their duty to sell some of this off in order to raise the cash to look after the land they do have.
I think there's a sort of clear distinction to be made between sites that are of low quality and low value that could be potentially sold off, and sites like part of St Anne's Park. I mean, by the council's own definition, St Anne's Park is the only formal space in the Brislington area. And if we don't meet that standard as residents in Brislington, why is the council proposing to sell off one of the only parts of formal space?
Well, what of course the council will say is that there isn't enough brownfield land around there, or there aren't enough derelict sites for them to be building on, so they have to use these parks.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I don't really understand why the council is continuing to press ahead with its core strategy. Now the regional spatial strategy has been effectively abolished, the council gets to choose the level of housing growth based on sort of, you know, evidence and good consultation with residents. But they're continuing to push ahead with 30,000 houses, which effectively ties their hands. And really, my question for the council will be, you know, are they really listening to the residents in this part, in this consultation?
Well, it's one of the things the council says, actually, it is our job to try and make sure as many people that want to live in Bristol can live in Bristol.
I don't object to development. I work in the development industry, so I guess I have a slightly vested interest. But what I do object to is the council setting a standard for open space. And within their own plan, they're effectively, because of new development and the increase in population, the standard of provision won't be met in the future because there'll be more people and they're not going to provide for additional spaces. The council doesn't have any policy mechanisms to deliver additional space unless it's with particularly large schemes. And whilst they have mechanisms to get money from some developments, generally it has to be quite a large scheme to actually provide new space on site. So there'll be money for improvements but no new space. So it's more people, same amount of space. As Brislington is quite marginal anyway in terms of informal, formal children's space, it's going to get even more crowded. And it's that impact on infrastructure, so schools, roads, health and green space, that the residents object to.
That was Paul Jobson, who's a planning expert. I mean, he's actually employed full-time doing planning advice for local authorities, and he's part of the Victory Park Action Group. Now, I'd just like you to sum up, if you can, for us. Can you just say what you think is going to be happening next after this demonstration next week?
Well, I hope that through the demonstration that all the relevant parties can come together and unite as a strong and united voice against this area green space proposal plan. I don't think anymore it's a question of marginalisation where we all fight our own individual. I mean, yes, we continue to do that, but I think we should all fight now as one.
Okay, well, that's Debbie Hurst from Brislington, Victory Park Campaign, and thanks very much also to Rosemary Rendu-Jeffries and Pauline Potter from Lodge Hill and Kingswood by Colsham Hospital. Now, there's a few things to say about this. Obviously, there's the protest next full council meeting. That's this coming Tuesday, starting at 5 p.m. at College Green. And I think also this is also worth reminding people that consultation finishes at the end of October. We also heard about the new website which went up today, that is at friendsofvictorypark.co.uk. The consultation is up on the internet. If you want to talk to the council and about it, there's a phone number, 0117 922 3719. Also, it's on the web at bristol.gov.uk/AGSP. That's AGSP. So I think the only other thing to say is just a final reminder for the protest next next Tuesday. Also to say there are several other of these consultations going on over the next couple of weeks. One at Bishopsworth, Hartcliffe and Whitchurch is taking place on Monday the 6th of September. That's next Monday at the Gatehouse Centre, Hare Clive Road in Bristol. We've also got one over the next couple of weeks for Bishopston, Cottam and Redland, taking place at Redland Parish Church Hall, Avonmouth and King's Weston at the Portway Rugby Development Centre, Henley's, Stoke Bishop and Westbury on Trim at Trinity Henley's United Reformed Church Bradbury Hall, and Ashley Easton and Lawrence Hill is taking place on Wednesday at Salvation Army Hall. That's Wednesday 22nd of September. All these details are on the internet and there is a nice little leaflet as well. So thanks very much to our guest in the first hour, Labour Councillor for Easton, Farouk Chowdhury. Thanks also to all the guests I just mentioned in the second hour and our old Labour economist, Martin Summers. Next week, after she had to cancel an appearance on this show in July, Bristol City Council's Liberal Democrat leader, Barbara Jank, was pencilled in, but her assistant called and cancelled. So we'll find someone else for next week. Thanks very much for joining us. See you next week.
Radio station for Bristol, and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.